gentlemen, welcome to another Red Ice Radio program. I'm Henrik, and this is the place where we tackle some of the more difficult topics. The website is redicecreations.com and redicecreations.net. We seek to expose falsehood and the mythmakers heavy at times. Yes, we wade through a lot of the murky areas where few dare to tread. And folks, keep in mind that when you tread in darkness, in falsehood and cover-ups, you are bound to stumble across some nasty things. Some of it will be false, some of it will be exaggerations, but some of it will be truth. And there's no way of finding it and sorting that out if we refuse to go there. Now, is it? If we were to instead join with the parasitical establishment and their charges made against us because it's safe and feels comfortable, then we would just be part of the problem, and we wouldn't really be looking for the truth, now would we? Consequently, we think it's important to give a voice to those who are pushed out to the margins of public discourse, and, well, if even that, there really isn't a public discourse. They are just excluded and censored. That is really the problem here. It really isn't a debate. It's just a one-sided issue. And not because these people's opinions are necessarily wrong or outrageously ignorant or hateful or whatever else you want to slap on that. It's because I think the opposition does not want us to expose their bluffs and fabrications. And that's why just hearing some of these people out and having consequently a real honest debate about many of the issues that we address is never really brought forward in the media outlets. So in this capacity, we are trying to be a little bit different and to tread into some of the areas where others, not all, but some don't dare to go or simply don't want to go. Well, today we're talking with another brave gentleman, John Friend. He is an independent blogger and journalist based in Southern California who maintains the realistreport.com. John focused primarily on the events of 9/11, World War II revisionism, media deception, and psychological warfare, and the power and influence of the Zionist lobby in America and the systematic assault and subversion on traditional Western European civilization. He is currently working on a book which will be examining and demystifying the New World Order conspiracy, often discussed in the alternative media in an attempt to clarify the main goals and ultimate agenda of the global power elite. John argues that the keys in understanding the New World Order conspiracy and ultimately what is really going on in the world today center around the entirely false official narrative of both 9/11 and World War II, along with the diabolical, tyrannical agendas that these events have and continue to promote. Hi, John. Welcome to Red Eyes Radio. Thank you so much for coming on with us. How are you doing tonight?
I'm great. Thank you very much for having me on. It's a great honor to be on Red Ice Creations.
Well, thank you so much. You know, we had a couple of topics here lined up, obviously, what we want to talk about and get into today. You do some great work over at therealistreport.com. So maybe it's always interesting hearing how people get on the path of truth-seeking and looking into the kind of topics we're going to talk more about here today, John. So what was the path like for you?
Sure, yeah, that's always a good place to start. And for me, I mean, growing up and going to school in America and going to college in America, I became sort of skeptical of the mainstream media and the mainstream political establishment back when I was in college. A friend of mine back in 2008 when Barack Obama was running, and I had a ton of friends at the time who just thought that Barack Obama was the savior and he was like the greatest thing ever. You know, meanwhile, nobody really knew anything about this guy. I was pointing out the fact that he was clearly being financed and funded by Wall Street and some of these big corporate interests. So I was just really skeptical and jaded with the mainstream political establishment, the mainstream media. I was very skeptical and critical of all the wars that America was fighting in. I recognized that they were not only immoral, but fundamentally against our national interests as a country. And I was learning about how we were torturing all these people, you know, down in Guantanamo Bay and all over the world and in the different CIA rendition programs that the military and our intelligence agencies were engaged in. So it was just really disillusioning, you know, learning about all these things and really seeing. I think I was a senior when the economy essentially collapsed in 2008.
Right.
And all these Wall Street banks that had basically robbed and defrauded millions of people all over America and really all over the world, they were not punished for their criminal activity. They were rewarded with a bailout.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the bankers received trillions of dollars when it was all said and done. And to this day, not a single one of them have been punished. So this was sort of my thinking, you know, when I was in college, finishing up my undergraduate degree. You know, as I said, I was very skeptical and jaded with the mainstream. I clearly recognized that something was wrong. And I was becoming more and more interested in third parties, Ron Paul, Ralph Nader. I was actually a big Ralph Nader supporter in the 2008 election. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with who Ralph Nader is.
But a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, he's basically, you know, sort of a traditional American populist figure. He's been involved in a number of different political activist type movements throughout, you know, the past 20, 30 years. And he ran for president a few times, including in 2008. So that was sort of my thinking. And I ended up moving to San Diego, California. And I was trying to find some sort of political group, some sort of a discussion group, because I was participating in discussions like this when I was living in Nebraska. And the first group I found, I just went online as soon as I moved out here, and I found the San Diegans for 9/11 Truth Group. And I had never thought about 9/11. I mean, I was really critical of the wars, obviously, but I never thought about 9/11. I never, you know, looked into it, mm-hmm. you know, looked into what we were really told and what actually happened. So that was really my first huge wake-up call. I mean, I knew things were corrupt and rotten, and the media was lying, and the government was lying, and everything was corrupt, but I didn't realize just how bad it was until I really started looking into 9/11. And that's pretty much what's led me to what I'm doing today. You know, I was so fascinated and really, I think, frightened by coming to the realization that what the government and media said about 9/11 was just not true. In fact, the conspiracy theory promoted by the government and media is so absurd and ridiculous. It is an utter insult to our intelligence as thinking human beings. And so I just wanted to get to the bottom of it. I wanted to figure out what really happened, who was responsible, and what the ultimate agenda was. Like, how could they get away with this? And one thing led to another, and I started connecting the dots thanks to the efforts of all sorts of different researchers and great people that have put out some really solid information out about 9/11. And I came to the conclusion that 9/11 was basically done by Israel, by the Jewish state of Israel, working in conjunction with Jewish criminals that control the American government and the American media. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. I think that's basically who was behind 9/11. And I think there's all sorts of proof to demonstrate that. And once I kind of came to that conclusion, I started researching all sorts of different aspects of history, in particular what we've been told about World War II and Adolf Hitler and National Socialist Germany and this alleged Holocaust that we hear so much about. And I mean, there's also other issues that I've researched and discussed on my website and on my radio program. But I think that's really kind of what led me to all this was just researching 9/11 and coming to the conclusion that it was almost the exact opposite of what the government and media said happened that day. So,
yeah. Well, you're hitting all the forbidden topics here, John. we'll yes. definitely talk about some of these and get into some more detail about this, but I'm just curious. Were your kind of initial contact with some of the 9/11 truth people or that group, was that kind of, did you have a resistance to it? Because I think that's an interesting thing. Some people, for some reason, they shut off, they shut down. They say, no way, you guys are kooks. And other people seem to just be kind of natural drawn to it. They're just like, what the hell is this? You know, I was like that. I was like, what the fuck is this? You know, I was like, I wanted to know more. I wanted to realize if it was true or not. But there seems to be a distinction for some reason, like two different groups of people, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I see that a lot in my personal life when I bring up some of these topics with either friends or acquaintances or family members. It is very difficult for a lot of people to objectively entertain these ideas. But for me, I mean, like I said, I was really skeptical of the government and the media already. So I was open to the idea. I mean, I really didn't know anything about 9/11. I had never really looked into the event. I sort of just took what the media and government said at face value, and I never really thought twice about it. And I remember I showed up there, and I was by far the youngest person there. It was mostly older people. And there is still a very active 9/11 truth group in San Diego. They're actually probably one of the one of the better, more organized and active groups in the country, I'd venture to say. I don't know that for sure, but they are very active and they are very dedicated, and they do a monthly meeting or a monthly meetup at a local community center out here where they screen a documentary. Usually it's related to 9/11, but they've also branched out and touched on other subjects. But for me, I mean, when I showed up there, I think the documentary we watched was Loose Change, which right. is sort of like a mainstream 9/11 truth documentary, I think you could say.
Sure, exactly.
It was made by a lot of the guys that are affiliated with Alex Jones. And they definitely keep a lot of very important information away from you about 9/11. I mean, just basic facts as to who was actually arrested on 9/11 in New York City and also around the country, who owned the World Trade Center towers, who essentially ran the Bush administration, who owns and controls the mass media, and really what agenda it served. So, I mean, they keep these facts from you, but I think anybody who's open to hearing an alternative explanation or an alternative idea about what actually happened on 9/11, if they sit down and watch that film, I mean, the official story, the official conspiracy theory unravels so quickly. I mean, it really is mind-blowing. And that's all it takes. I mean, you just got to sit down and think critically and have an open mind and entertain these alternative ideas. And I think I've been able to do that really, I think I'd like to say my whole life, but especially now. But I do think you're right. I think there's a lot of people that simply don't have that ability. And I think a big reason why is because there has been a very successful and effective and ongoing psychological warfare operation that has been waged against the entire world, really. But I think, you know, as we talk further, I think we can narrow it down and identify that this ongoing psychological warfare operation is specifically targeting white people around the world. I think our history has been weaponized. I think our political discourse, our political language has been weaponized specifically against white people. And I think there's all sorts of reasons to support that as well.
Right. Yeah, I'll definitely want to talk a bit more about that here later. And obviously, you know, kind of as you said, there's so much information out there. There's so many tangents, so many different rabbit holes one can go down. And I know that you're currently writing a book on kind of demystifying the New World Order conspiracy as well. I want to get into this a little bit later too. But, you know, we're not strangers to these ideas, far from it. But just I wanted to ask you a little bit more about the motive. Let's talk a little bit about Israel's involvement in 9/11, what you found there, and what you think some of the main reasons were for why they pulled this off and to get the wheels turning in this direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, I think really if you look at who benefited from 9/11, there's no doubt that Israel and international Jewry benefited. I mean, Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, said as much. I mean, he openly made that statement. I have a quote right here, and he says here, "We're benefiting from one thing, and that is the attack on the Twin Towers and Pentagon and the American struggle in Iraq." So he openly made that statement. There was another Israeli counterterrorism expert, and he said, from the perspective of the Jews, 9/11 is the most important public relations act ever committed in our favor. So, I mean, those are two very important quotes from Jews themselves who are openly saying that 9/11 has benefited Israel and the international Jewish community. And the way I like to think about 9/11, what is it accomplished? It's accomplished, number one, the initiation, the kickstart, the institutionalization of this idea of a global war on terror. And this very idea, this paradigm of international relations, this idea of a global war on terror goes back to Israel. It goes back to Benjamin Netanyahu and other Jewish intellectuals and military strategists who essentially concocted this paradigm and manufactured it back in the 1970s. I think it was the late 1970s, if I'm not mistaken. And I mean, they worked with other intellectuals and propagandists that have very influential positions in the United States and in Western Europe. And so they kind of created this idea that the West needed to engage in this never-ending, ongoing war against a faceless enemy, this boogeyman known as Islamic extremism. And I think if you look at a lot of these quote-unquote terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda, and now we see ISIS making headlines, I think you'll notice, and I think if you really objectively, you know, research this, you'll see that these quote-unquote terrorist groups are essentially creations of the mass media and the various Western intelligence agencies. They're essentially manufactured or created enemies that have been used to perpetuate this idea that there really is a global war on terror. And look at what it's accomplished. I mean, we have basically destroyed all of Israel's enemies or all of Israel's adversaries in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's all sorts of documents that kind of lay out this strategy that have been written over the years. And all of them clearly advocate and want the West, especially the United States and her NATO allies, to essentially gang up on all of Israel's enemies in the Middle East, paving the way for Zionist domination in the region. And that's exactly what's happened, I think.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I mean, 9/11 really kickstarts this whole process. The neocons basically take over American foreign policy. They take over anything that is conservative and drives it into this kind of revolutionary, democratic kind of ideal, at least on the surface, right? We're going to bring these savages over there in the Middle East, democracy and, gay mm-hmm. rights and feminism and all those kinds of things, right? And getting, of course, the West involved in all of these wars in the Middle East. So it's really the event that's central to kicking everything off, you know?
It is. I think it really is sort of the key event that our entire foreign policy at this point revolves around. You know, it's the strategic center of gravity around which our entire foreign policy is formulated. And so we not only have the foreign policy aspect of 9/11, what it accomplished, and again, that was the kickstart and really the institutionalization of this idea of a global war on terror that America and NATO have to fight forever. I mean, they're openly saying this, that we're going to be engaged in this struggle for generations. It's a generational struggle, they say.
Yeah.
You know, it's totally Orwellian and totally ridiculous. So we have that aspect. And then if you look at what's happened domestically in America and domestically even in Europe and in other parts of the world, we see this sort of, I call it the homeland security mindset, where, you know, everyone is a potential terrorist. You can't criticize the government, otherwise you're supporting the terrorists. You know, we need the TSA at our airports to pat us all down, and we have to go through body scanners that are manufactured by Jews like Michael Chertoff and his companies. I mean, the whole entire idea, both homelands, this homeland security mindset and this global war on terror are entirely Jewish manufactured ideas and paradigms of public policy. That's one thing we have to understand. We even see now in America, I'm not sure what it's like in Europe, but in America, virtually all of our key law enforcement agencies, whether it's at the federal level, at the state level, or even at the local level, all of these people are literally going to Israel to be trained by the Israeli military and by the Israeli police force.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, our foreign policy and our domestic policy have essentially been outsourced to the Israelis.
Yeah.
It's an incredible situation. And I mean, really, that to me are the two key points about 9/11 is this global war on terror idea and then also this homeland security idea. And again, both of them are entirely fabricated and manufactured by international Jewry.
Yeah, there's a lot of telecommunications that they've handed security companies, a lot of things actually involved around the whole 9/11 event. That of course takes it in this direction. What would you say to someone who doubts this, or let's say that they have, you know, they're kind of stuck in the loose change aspect of everything, and they're still thinking it's an inside job, it's the Bushes, it's, you know, the neocons primarily who did it, it's not an Israeli thing. What would you say to those people who are doubting this?
That's a good question. You know, the first thing that I always start with is I just ask people who was actually arrested in New York City in connection with what was going on that day. Who was actually arrested? There was 5 Israelis that were arrested that day by the New Jersey State Police, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And these individuals were filming the day's events, and they were laughing about it and celebrating it. When they were arrested, they specifically told the arresting officer that we are not your problem. Your problem are the Palestinians. I mean, it was just so blatant what they were doing and how they were trying to pin this on the Muslims, on the Arabs. And I mean, this isn't the only thing. There was these guys that were arrested in New York City. There was also a massive Israeli spy ring that was operating all across the United States. And this is something that has happened throughout American history. I mean, we have countless examples of Jewish spies that have infiltrated and had key positions in our military, in our government, in our media, that have passed secrets to Israel, engaged in all sorts of criminal and espionage related activities. And this is another thing that was going on leading up to 9/11. There was this spy ring operating all across the United States. And these are facts. I mean, we have the police report of these guys that were arrested in New York City. We have countless DEA and FBI reports documenting that there was all these Israeli spies operating across the United States leading up to 9/11 and on the day. And there's some reason to believe that some of these guys were actually casing or following, setting up some of these alleged Arab hijackers. And this kind of gets a little bit complex when you really get into the nuts and bolts of 9/11, because I think the entire hijacker scenario was just created in the media. I don't think there really were any hijacked airliners. But again, that's kind of a complex aspect of 9/11. But that's the first thing that I'd bring up is who was actually arrested on 9/11. Another key point is who actually controlled the World Trade Center complex. And it was a Jew named Larry Silverstein. He had total control basically of the entire complex. And he took out an insurance policy which ended up netting him, I think, three times what he originally paid for the buildings themselves.
Right.
So it was a huge financial crime, 9/11 was, mainly centered around this guy, Larry Silverstein, and his network of Jewish criminals centered in New York.
Yeah, with Jonathan Pollard, a famous Israeli spy, still imprisoned in America somewhere, but that's just kind of scratching the surface, really. There's so many aspects. But the important thing here to keep in mind, of course, is how this is being held off, not only in the media, but also it seems that the investigators, the police, somewhere along the line must be shut down, right? Because if it's known, if people are being arrested, for some reason, it's not followed through on, right? For some reason, it's being held off. And that's, of course, a really difficult question. For us being on the outside, we simply don't know what's happening on the inside. And in this case, we have way too few insiders speaking out. I know that there are a few, of course, but I wish there were more cops, more investigators, more official people that started speaking out about this, that really showed what is happening, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I agree. And, you know, for me, that was really the question that I was trying to figure out, was when I realized that what we were told about 9/11 was just simply not true and really actually preposterous when you stop and think about it. How could they do this? How could they get away with this? How could they cover this up? And how was nobody, whether in Congress, in the media, or in any high position or position of influence in society, how was no one saying anything about this?
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? That was what really just baffled me. And I think the main reason is because, well, there's a lots of reasons for it. I mean, political correctness is huge. I mean, people simply just don't want to question the government, question the media, and they certainly don't want to bring up uncomfortable truths about Jewish power and influence in America. But if we look specifically at the 9/11 investigation, virtually all of the key players had ties to this international Jewish criminal network that was behind 9/11 and direct ties to the State of Israel. The guy that was responsible for letting all these Israelis that were arrested on 9/11 off the hook and sent back to Israel was Michael Chertoff. He was the head. Yeah, he was a key figure in the Justice Department in the Bush administration, and he later on became the first director of the Department of Homeland Security. This guy was the main individual responsible for letting all of these Israelis that were arrested back to Israel, to essentially deport them back to Israel. And if you look at the 9/11 Commission report, the main guy was a Jew, Philip Zelikow. And there's all sorts of other Jewish individuals that were involved in the official investigation and really cover up and memorialization of the event, the institutionalization of this big lie of our history. If you look at the 9/11 Memorial Museum, this is an interesting topic that I don't hear people talk about too often. The 9/11 Memorial Museum in New York City is actually run by experts from the Holocaust Museum.
Oh, really? Interesting.
So they have they have this fundamental interest in perpetuating these big lies and transmitting them to future generations to uphold their narrative of history and really to advance their agenda. Yeah, it's really interesting how that works. I mean, this was reported on at the time when the museum first opened, that basically the Holocaust industry, people who were working for various Holocaust museums, came over to the 9/11 museum to run it.
Well, they would be the experts, I guess, right?
They would be the experts. That's exactly right. That is right.
So obviously, a lot of this is shut out of the media. There's, you know, we know how some of these things go. They pick up on stories, and usually they make a non-story into, you know, national news, global news in some cases. And then, of course, the real important stories are never even touched. This is kind of how it works. But that's, I mean, I would say that's one of the biggest predicaments right now. Yes, we have the internet. Yes, we have a lot of people turning away from the mainstream media. But I just want to, for a moment, kind of contemplate, talk a little bit about how damaging it's been to have the media in foreign control, really, because that's what it is. And I would include the entertainment in that. I would include the music industry and all the things that basically help to shape people's worldview, help shape their kind of framework on life and even their morals in some cases. That's really where the big problem is, in my view. What do you think, John?
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, I think this is the main problem we face at this point. Is we have a media complex and a quote-unquote entertainment complex. I don't even consider what passes for entertainment actually genuine entertainment these days. I mean, it's just nothing but degenerate filth. But I mean, people, you know, a lot of people like it, so whatever. But you're right. I mean, the media complex, the entertainment complex, our educational system, they really do help people interpret their reality, interpret the world they live in, understand our history. And we have to understand that our history has been entirely weaponized. We get nothing but either entirely false history or entirely distorted history that serves a particular purpose. And I think if you look at who actually owns and controls the media in the entertainment complex and who has a huge influence in our educational system, you'll see that it is the organized Jewish community that owns and controls these institutions. And they are using it as a weapon to systematically deceive us and to manipulate us and to sort of shape our minds to go along with their program and with their agenda.
Did you ever see Hollywoodism, you know, kind of the construction of what they call the American dream, kind of this hijacking? It's based on a book written by Neil Gabler, but it was turned into a documentary as well. Did you ever see that one?
You know, I don't know if I have seen it. What was it titled?
Oh, really? It's Hollywoodism. I know it's have a different title. There's two different titles for them, but it's basically, yeah, okay, this is it. I'm looking at it right now. It's Hollywoodism, Jews, Movies, and the American Dream. That's the full title.
Okay, you know, I don't think I've seen that, actually.
Oh, boy, really? I got to send a copy of that to you later and take a look at that, because that's, well, it basically just lays the kind of the ideological and the, what would you call it, the infrastructure backdrop to what you basically just said, that when the major, studios in Hollywood were set up, they were set up by five Eastern European Jews, and they were basically involved in, this is their view, of course, how they saw this, but creating the American dream as a kind of an artificial false bubble on the outset, kind of that was meant to create a kind of a shadow world, basically. And what they say in the documentary is how America itself were kind of, drawn into this bubble and basically turned their dreams and aspirations into what they presented on the movie screen. It's a very fascinating documentary that kind of breaks the whole story down. And it verifies what you just said for people who doubt that this is the case, you know?
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, I think really if you look at the 20th century, it really was the total, we saw during the 20th century, the total Jewish takeover of Western civilization, essentially. I mean, they were elevated and they took over the banking system. I mean, they already had a huge control in the banking system, but they basically took it over. Look at the Federal Reserve Act in 1913 in the United States. I don't know the exact statistics, but I mean, it's at least 75%. Of all of the heads of the Federal Reserve banks. I mean, they're all Jews. The entire banking system. Look at Wall Street. It's all owned and controlled by Jews. Look at our media. And this is something that's really frustrating, because if you bring up these facts, you're immediately called an anti-Semite or a neo-Nazi or a racist or a conspiracy theorist. Conspiracy theorist. These are all weaponized terms that are just used to demonize people that are telling the truth about what is really going on in the world and who's really in control. Yeah, I mean, you're totally right. The media and our political system is totally controlled by these people. I'm not sure what the situation's like in Europe. I understand that the United Kingdom is probably almost even worse than what we see in the United States, if you can believe that.
Yeah, historically, I think it's more anchored and rooted there. I think over in America, and actually they describe this in the movie or the documentary I mentioned to Hollywoodism, but this kind of exclusion that they saw themselves as the outsider, and it was kind of their goal from an ideological point of view to take, you know, to get into the country club, get into the organizations there. Mm-hmm. They were held out from initially as a way to deconstruct them by the time they actually managed to take control over them. But in Britain and many European countries, of course, that's been an ongoing issue for several hundred years, in some cases a thousand years before it ended up on the American continent, you know?
Yeah, and this sounds, what you're describing sounds a lot like what Dr. Kevin MacDonald talks about in his book, Culture of Critique, and in a lot of the writings that he's done on his website, the Occidental Observer. And I know you've interviewed him a few times, so I'm sure you're familiar.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he kind of describes this Jewish evolutionary strategy to kind of infiltrate and really subvert traditional Western civilization, specifically to advance Jewish interests and to end or combat, quote-unquote, anti-Semitism. You know, that's really, I think, what drives these people. And it's really an amazing story, and it's something that I think is critical to understanding what's really going on and how our societies have been so twisted and subverted and polluted, really. I mean, just think in the past, just since I've graduated high school. I mean, when I was in high school, for example, homosexuality was not the cool thing. It was not elevated and promoted in the media and in mainstream society like we see today. Just in the past 10 years, 15 years. I mean, we've seen this and all throughout Western civilization, all throughout Western history, for the most part, I mean, homosexuality has not been tolerated and elevated as some, you know, awesome lifestyle that we all need to look up to or something like that. And look what's happened today. It's the dominant lifestyle. It's what's promoted and elevated. And we see this with transgenderism, race mixing, you know, interracial marriages, you know, all sorts of things. We've seen a fundamental assault and subversion of traditional Western civilization emanating primarily from the organized Jewish community.
You know, they say this, of course, as a kind of a liberation, right, from traditional values, from things that really were holding people back, or that somehow these values, whether you choose them or not, are kind of innate or kind of fascistic innate in themselves, right? That the big struggle here has been to kind of, you know, set women free, right? Create this division between men and women. I mean, you can, it all, of course, depends on how you view this, but the very fact that this has been so detrimental to the fabric of Western society is absolutely clear at this point. But the very aspect here that I think maybe there is an idea here that they really see this as a kind of an entrapment, that they are liberating people. I'm not sure what really is the driving factor here, if this is something that's done genuinely, meaning, okay, we need to do good work here, or if it's done kind of, what you alluded to with Kevin MacDonald's work, that it's kind of a deeply more psychologically rooted maybe vengeance kind of idea. There's something that needs to be broken down, or the very fact that they were maybe excluded from certain European societies during certain periods in time, and now there's kind of a resentment towards that. I'm still struggling with that. I'm not sure, but what do you think, John?
I think it's definitely the latter, primarily because what they promote for the West, you know, they promote open borders for the West, they promote homosexuality for the West, they promote all these really culture-destroying ideas and nation-destroying ideas. But if you look at the organized Jewish community in the Jewish state of Israel, they don't tolerate any of that. There's no diversity. There's no multiculturalism in Israel. There's no massive third-world immigration into Israel. So really, we see this fundamental hypocrisy emanating from the organized Jewish community, where they can openly advocate and organize as a racial group, as an ethnic group, and yet everyone else is denied that same right, especially white people.
Oh, definitely. Exactly.
Yeah, and I think what you've seen in the West, especially in America, I mean, I can speak primarily from an American perspective because I was born and raised here and I have a deeper understanding of what's going on here. We see the Jews, use and work with other minorities to really tear down and destroy traditional American white society. We saw that with the civil rights movement. We see that with what's going on with the invasion of you know, essentially the invasion of America by third worlders from Mexico and Central America. We see that with the gay rights movement. I mean, they use these minorities to essentially attack and tear down traditional Western societies.
And, you know, one thing I've always pointed out too is that I think that they don't really care about these minorities. They don't care about these special interest groups or victim classes or anything. They just realize that they can piggyback their own ideology, their own political issues on these other groups, basically taking advantage of them. That I think that if they really knew these various groups, if they really knew how they're being used and why, I hope at least that they would be outraged at this idea, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I completely agree. I don't think there's ever really been any genuine sympathy from the organized Jewish community. They've just used these people in their war against Western civilization. I think that's really what it boils down to.
Absolutely. So obviously at this stage then, we most people don't say anything. They can't say anything. They're not allowed to talk about it. It's a discussion that just is not happening, despite the fact that you can, you could prove perhaps, politically motivated events in the world by looking at other countries, by looking at other cultures and people. But in this regard, it's completely off topic. And it's, I think that something has happened as well, kind of internally in people psychologically, because if you can observe reality in the real world, but then at the same time, you're not allowed to talk about it, or let's say that you self-censor, you shut yourself down and realize that, you know, you're not allowed to critique this particular group. I think that that's one of the worst things that could happen. It's almost like a kind of a primitive form of mind control. When you see something in the real world and you mm-hmm. kind of, you have it internally, but you can't join those two things, right? You're not allowed to do that. So you actually cause a kind of an internal schism within yourself, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, that's exactly what political correctness is. That's really enveloped and closed down upon Western societies. I mean, if you think about it, really, who are the only people you're allowed to bash and trash and criticize? It's white people. You're not allowed to criticize or even state basic facts about the organized Jewish community, about organized Jewish power and influence in America or in Europe. You're certainly not allowed to criticize multiculturalism and massive third world immigration. And if you do, you're immediately tarred and smeared as some sort of bigot, as some sort of racist, as some sort of anti-Semite. And to me, that's what is so ridiculous, is these people openly admit what they're up to. They openly admit to their power and influence in our societies. And yet, if we quote them, if we just point out the fact that they're bragging about this, that they're openly stating this in their books, in their newspaper articles, in their op-eds, then we're called a racist and an anti-Semite.
Yeah.
It's a totally ridiculous and unacceptable situation.
Yeah, I always just like to kind of turn the other, put the shoe on the other foot, as they say, in terms of, what actually, when you look at some of the things that are out there currently and the way that things are written about, or even what's on the TV and stuff like that, and it's really important to people, look at these things, analyze them, write about them, make videos about them, get it out in the open and start looking at all the different facets, like, real-time analysis of describing the problem. Because, we had one of these universities came out and talking about a course that they had called The Problem of Whiteness,
Right.
And so, yeah. I mean, think about it. If there was a course called The Problem of Blackness, or The Problem of Jewishness or Jews or something like that, I mean, and this is all I'm asking people to do at this stage. What would happen? And think about that reaction. And how do you feel internally when you have those reactions? So why is it okay for one of these items, but not for the other, right? So it's this across the board. I made the comparison another time that even in the wildest dreams of what people think, white societies used to be like, they have to go back to maybe, between 1910 and 1930 to find a couple of examples of maybe, full on like racism in the movies and stuff like that. But in comparison of what's going on today, it never was that bad, even when you go back, 60, 70, 80 years. But somehow this is not recognized, right? This is a one-way street. And that's my biggest problem with these issues, that it's it's completely off limits everyone else, but it's open season on, you know, blaming Whitey for everything, right?
Oh, I know. I know. It's absolutely incredible. And this was actually an aspect of kind of understanding and putting the pieces together as to what is really going on in the world. This was one of the last pieces that I kind of discovered and really looked into. And I think a lot of it has to do with a lot of the reason why we see this in society today, this political correctness, this idea that it's somehow illegitimate for white people to identify as white and to, you know, want to organize and advance their own unique political and cultural and economic and historical interests, why this is viewed as somehow evil and wrong and illegitimate by the vast majority of people is because of the lies associated with World War II and Adolf Hitler and National Socialism and this alleged Jewish Holocaust. I think that the fake Holocaust story, and I can openly state that since I live in America and many countries, even saying that, even criticizing or disagreeing with any aspect of the official Holocaust story is a criminal offense. But I mean, at this point, I think it's been thoroughly proven that the entire narrative is utterly false. Again, it's preposterous, just like the official 9/11 story. But I think that this mindset, this political correctness mindset, goes back to the lies associated with World War II.
Right. That's their cornerstone. That's the sacred cow you're not allowed to touch, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think about it. The first time you say anything pro-white or openly identify as white, what are you called? You're called a Nazi.
Yeah.
A Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews. I mean, it really is ridiculous and preposterous and absurd, but it is a very effective propaganda campaign that has been waged very successfully by the organized Jewish community.
Yeah, I mean, look at how the media writes about it. It's truly remarkable, you know, when some people depend. I mean, and it's so, some of the comments they make are so mellow. These are very nice people. They're, you know, I talk with some of them. They're accused of these things, and you know, you recognize that they are real human beings. They have real values. They don't hate other people. They're simply concerned about what's happening, and they feel a need to explain themselves and explain to other people what is happening, explain their view. But you know, look at how some of the media are writing about some of these people, the charges against them, the, you know, the way that some of these organizations and groups go after them. I mean, it's really done in a way, and this is a red flag for me as well, because it demonstrates that, wait a minute, it's something that is absolutely off limits that the current globalist elite are trying to prevent people from doing. So I'm going to say, all right, what is that all about? There's something interesting here. There's a factor to mm-hmm. why the fact that we are not allowed to organize or even have our own interests as other groups mm-hmm. do. And why is that? You know, why is that?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it kind of their overreaction and their hysteria. I mean, we see in Europe, I just put an article up today on my website, over in Britain, they're trying to treat people who promote racial hatred online, quote unquote, racial hatred and anti-Semitism, basically people who criticize non-whites and who state basic facts about Jewish power and influence and the Jewish agenda in the Western world. People who say these things online are going to be considered criminals nowadays. I mean, I think they even have laws in place right now where you can be arrested for saying things like this. There was a young man, I think, Garen Helm was his name, who was arrested.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a very Orwellian situation. But I think, you know, any independent thinker or even slightly critical thinker that's looking into what's going on, they've got to understand that there is very clearly an agenda to limit debate and discussion on certain topics. And I think World War II is the, you know, most obvious one at this point. I mean, you, like I said, you can't even criticize or disagree with or do scholarly legitimate research into different aspects of World War II, especially as it relates to the Holocaust. You can't even do that in what is it, 20 countries in Europe? I mean, yeah. It's literally criminalized. It is absurd. This goes against every single Western philosophical and an intellectual tradition. I mean, this is thoroughly Talmudic. Talk about the Jewish takeover of Western civilization. That right there proves it. You're not allowed to question this sacred story. And that's exactly how the rabbis think. You're not allowed to criticize or question the rabbis. That's another important point that Dr. McDonald talks about in his book, you know, the history of the organized Jewish community and how, you know, no one was allowed to question the rabbi. It was very tyrannical. And that's exactly what we see institutionalized in the Western world today.
Yeah. Well, it's truly extraordinary. I definitely want to talk a little bit more about, you know, your view on World War II later and what actually happened there and all these kinds of issues. But I wanted to talk about other couple of things here before we go into that territory. Sure. I mean, it's weaponized the ideas, the concepts, the language, as you say, the very aspect that you're not allowed to freely think how you want and express those thoughts anymore. It's obviously done in such a way so that, you know, they will win in their conquest. I mean, this is designed in a way to make you give up before you even begin to not recognize that there is a threat against, you know, your civilization, against you know, your people or your country, however, you know, you view that. It's almost like it's at such a point now that the layers of the conspiracy of the propaganda surrounding this, that even when you begin talking about those kinds of things, what do you mean your people or your country, right? It's like nestled itself so deeply into the educational system that most people who are young today that grow up don't even have a concept of, you know, who they are or who they belong to anymore, at least in Western or white countries, you know. But it seems fine for others, but not for us for some reason.
Yes, yes. I mean, it really is a form of psychological tyranny, I think, or psychological slavery. Where, and what you just said is really important. I think in America especially, you know, I look around and I see basically a totally deracinated people.
White
people have absolutely no racial or ethnic identity at all. And I mean, I was like this for a long time until I kind of woke up to what was going on. I think we all kind of have some sort of racial identity at sort of a base level, but it's not consciously processed or recognized until you make that effort, because we're certainly not taught that in school. In fact, it's demonized, and you're not allowed to think in racial terms, especially if you're white. If you're Jewish, it's okay, and you know, you can apply for Jewish scholarships and go to Jewish schools and take Jewish-sponsored trips to the state of Israel and everything else. But white people were certainly not allowed to do that. And I think it's been very, very detrimental. In fact, I think that is the primary goal of this whole New World Order concept. It's the destruction of any sort of racial consciousness and national organization, you know, on a political level. It's the destruction of the national idea, the idea that different racial groups have common interests and they need to form political entities to champion and advance those interests. That idea, that national idea, has been entirely discredited and turned on its head over the course of the past 100 years or so. And I think really what World War II was all about was utterly annihilating any sort of resistance to the Jew world order, this multicultural, total destruction of the national idea. And that was represented with Adolf Hitler's Germany, National Socialist Germany. They were the last real national state. And I think today what we see is just, as you said, a totally deracinated West where multiculturalism is state policy. And white people are just, you know, have no identity at all. It's strictly based on materialism and satisfying our base physical and sexual desires at this point. It's really a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, it really is. It's gone so quick, but at the same time, it's a very slow, methodical kind of process that we've been going through in the last two, three generations, really, I'd say. Ever since the 60s, it's kind of just steamrolled over us. But they're really pushing it now, though, I got to say. I mean, they're almost dangerously close pushing their absurdity. And I think more and more people are waking up as a consequence to that. Because, I mean, it's just getting so out of control, the rhetoric and you know, what they're trying to claim is racism or, you know, isn't or whatever. And, I mean, it's the situation is just unbelievable. You have basically all Europeans are bending over backwards not to express any self-interest whatsoever in a kind of a method of trying to, you know, accommodate others or that somehow to repent yourself from the sins of your fathers, of how horrible, you know, racists they were because, you know, their two generations to go, they had a colony in another country or something like that, right? But this is really the thinking. This is really what's happening in the educational field. And of course, as a consequence, you get a lot of self-hating people that actually, they feel this, you know, guilt associated with their skin color, and they feel that they need to repent for that, or they need to kind of do something to try to prove to others that this is, they're not like that anymore, right?
Oh, yes. This is very prevalent in mainstream American society, in our university systems, for sure. And I'm sure it's very similar in Europe. And how they did it in America, it's really based around, number one, slavery. and this idea of, you know, this history, the standard history of American slavery is so distorted. I mean, very few white people in America actually own slaves. And I mean, it's entirely taken out of context. That, for one, the fact that the slave trade was largely financed and run by the Jews, by the organized Jewish community, is never discussed in our schools. And the fact that, you know, the Africans themselves, the blacks in Africa, were selling their own – they were, you know, capturing and enslaving other blacks to sell to the Jews and other Europeans for the slave trade. So it's been fundamentally weaponized where it's all white people's fault. We have this collective guilt. We're collectively to blame for this injustice. And there's no doubt. I mean, I don't think that slavery can be justified by any means. And I think, you know, most pro-white people I meet, all pro-white people I meet for that matter, you know, they don't want to rule over other races. They just want to be left alone to have their own land free from other racial interference. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, what is wrong with that at all? I don't understand why that is such an illegitimate or evil idea. It's a very natural idea.
Of course. And you just have to put it in the context of other people. Who would stop the Albanians from trying to run their own country? No one. That's ridiculous, exactly. Right? But it's somehow, that's what I'm saying, the very makeup of who we are have been redefined now, that where we are here to accommodate for everybody, you know, but this is never really, you know, taken to understanding by people in the West, that if you go to other countries today, they are largely, not in every case, but they're largely homogenous among their own, and they determine their own things. And you know, who knows? Maybe one day the global elite, once they've, you know, they're never going to succeed with this, but as they're trying to destroy European societies, maybe they will turn to them and try to do it there. I know they've tried a little bit in Japan now. The globalists have been very upset because they're very, you know, homogenous in Japan. I think they even tried to use the nuclear disaster in Fukushima as a way. The Council on Foreign Relations came out and talked about, now this is a great opportunity to try to bring in more immigration into Japan, was one of the first things it said. So
unbelievable.
Who knows, right? Maybe they'll turn to them in due time. But the fact is, my point is, as of for now anyway, this is only something that's strictly you know, attributed to the West, and it's like it's to normalize that this is just how it is in your countries now, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and again, I mean, the hypocrisy is so in your face. And it's just so blatant what is going on and what they're trying to do. You know, I think there are more and more people who are starting to question it, at least, and catch on to what's going on. And ultimately, I think with the rise of the internet and people actually taking a stand and trying to explain these things in as clear a manner as possible, I think, you know, their agenda is ultimately going to fail. It's untenable. I mean, really, if you think about it. And what's even more incredible is they've been able to do this with really without even firing a shot. I mean, they've been able to manipulate us so effectively through their control of media and information and control of politics and finances and whatnot. They've been able to do most of this without even firing a shot, at least in America. I mean, in Germany, they essentially destroyed the entire nation because, like I said, they were really the last resistance to this tyrannical New World Order agenda. But I mean, in most Western countries, they have not had to fire a single shot. We've willingly succumbed and submitted to this agenda. And largely it's been accomplished through psychological warfare, I think.
Well, exactly. And you know, a person who's in marketing would say that, you know, they have these terms, right? But they talk about the guilt dollar. Say that it's one of the most powerful market forces that there is. And to a large extent, it's actually the children that controls that, the guilt dollar, because, you know, parents feel guilty because they're not, you know, whatever, spending enough time with their kids or whatever. So, you know, they see something on the TV and they, you know, express a desire to want it. And it's more likely that the parent will actually buy something if it's based on guilt. And I think it's the same thing in this case. It's more likely, and especially for Europeans, it's like our altruistic values have definitely been taken advantage of in this case, But then at the same time, you know, they've guilt people into this position to, as I said, basically give up before they even begin, and saying, you know, it's wrong to say anything against this because, you know, whatever, history's been turned against you, and don't even debate about this because it'll make you feel bad at the end, right? So it's a mm-hmm. very clever, very insidious way that this has been done, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And what's really sad is that we have had very few people, you know, very few politicians and other high profile people stand up and say anything about this and try to put a stop to it and try to tell the truth about what's really going on. And the people that have sadly been demonized or assassinated even, or, you know, otherwise eliminated. And I mean, again, I think this is going to be changing as we continue going forward here. I think there's just too many people out there on the internet, you know, speaking out about this and really organizing and trying to do something about it. But yeah, I mean, that's really the sad part is there hasn't been too much resistance to this from our elite society, from the people who traditionally are supposed to look out for the nation, our leadership class. We've seen a total sellout from our leaders, I think, across the board in the Western world.
Yeah, exactly. No leadership. I think we were talking about this the other day too, and I think it's kind of like it's a way that traditional, I'd say, European values have been hijacked and moved to the side. So, you know, if you look at most Hollywood movies, it's always about the underdog or the outsider. And this documentary I mentioned earlier, Hollywoodism, really shows this too, that this was quite intentional. It was actually a way of depicting, you know, a group that's on the outside that's trying to kind of gain control of the situation or win or something like that over those who are kind of in a field of domination, if you will. But I think traditionally, European stories and things like that were usually of heroes and kings mm-hmm. and leaders. Yeah. There were people in positions of power that led the people, and not these cowards that are sitting behind a desk with a pen, you know, but actually out there in the mm-hmm. fields leading the charge and stuff like that, right? But this right. has somehow
and
been
they're very very righteous and honorable,
exactly,
and honest,
exactly.
And we've seen a total destruction of that. Yeah,
that's just it. And I think it's also it's not that it's just a cultural framework of this have been programmed into us by movies, but it's also that they're very willing. And by God, I'm not saying we shouldn't criticize our leaders, far from it. But I'm saying they've been very willing in the media to show the corruption of politicians, to maybe even put those kinds of people in place, both for blackmail purposes, but also for purposes of at someday showing to the people that, look, here is your leaders, don't trust them. It's kind of a way, almost another layer to the psychological warfare of making us leaderless. I don't know, maybe that's going too yeah. far, but
no, I think that's a good point. And I think that's actually talked about in the Protocols of Zion, that infamous document that is an alleged forgery. You know, the Jewish community is always claiming that it's this made-up document, this anti-Semitic screed. But all you got to do, guys, is pull up a copy of it on the internet and sit down and read it, and you'll see that basically they followed that exact blueprint to achieve their goals. And I think that is actually outlined in there. You know, they try to discredit certain leaders and tear them down and get people to question them and not want to go along with the program. And I think that has been a strategy that they've pursued, no doubt.
Right. I have many more things I want to ask you about. Obviously, I want to ask you a little bit more about the Second World War, what happened there, and all these kind of connected surrounding issues to that. But let's just give people your website here, and also tell us, of course, if you, I know you might not have an ETA on your upcoming book, but if you want to, please tell us a little bit about it and when you think it might be available for people.
Yeah, sure. So the website is therealistreport.com, and I usually post anywhere from 2 to 4 or 5 times a week, usually short blog articles. And mostly what I try to do is highlight articles I read in the Jewish press and Jewish newspapers, Israeli newspapers, just to kind of show not only their agenda, but to show what they themselves openly say and brag about. I mean, in many cases, they are just openly saying these things. It's not necessarily me. You know, you can quote various Jewish intellectuals, politicians, public policymakers, propagandists, etc., and basically just show that they're admitting to their power and influence and openly admitting to their agenda and what they're really up to. So that's really what I try to focus on my website. If you go over there, you can follow it by email if anybody's interested. Just type in your email there and you'll get all my posts sent directly to your inbox. The book, yeah, I am working on it right now. It's been kind of a work in progress, and I've really tried to make it a goal with the new year to focus on it and get it done. I have a good idea of really what I want to cover. And as we talked about previously, it really is sort of my attempt to demystify and kind of clarify what this new world order we hear so much about, what it really is, what its main goals are and its main agendas, and who's ultimately behind it. I mean, because that was a huge thing when I was kind of waking up to all this, is researching 9/11. There's all these different theories and perspectives available on the internet. And it's like that with virtually any topic right now. I mean, there's all sorts of different avenues of research that you could get into. And you know, you immediately start hearing about a new world order and you know, a tyrannical world government. And it was always unclear what exactly that meant. So that my book is basically an attempt to explain all this from my own personal perspective, from my own personal research. And basically the one of the main points that I argue is that to understand what's really going on and what the real agenda is, you have to understand both 9/11 truth, who was really behind 9/11, and I think it's really obvious at this point that it was the organized Jewish community and the state of Israel that was behind 9/11. They've benefited. It's served their agenda primarily, and I think that's very, very clear. There's been all sorts of research done to document and prove this at this point. And then the second aspect is understanding what World War II was really all about, understanding historical revisionism, and really thinking critically about this alleged Jewish Holocaust we hear so much about, and what you know, agenda this is promoted. So really, those are the key pillars of the New World Order, in my opinion, is really 9/11 truth and World War II revisionism. And that's basically what I argue in the book. I also address a number of other subjects, but really that's kind of the main thesis, I guess you could say. So yeah, I'm not sure exactly when it's going to be done. I don't want to guess, but it's something I'm still plugging away on, so hopefully I'll have it done here in the next couple months, and I'll definitely send you a link to it. Maybe we can talk about it again.
Oh, definitely, for sure. In the meantime, then we'll relay people to therealistreport.com. We'll have the link up on redicecreations.com as well. But yeah, we'll take a short break here, John, so stay with us, and we'll be right back with more. Hour two is coming up. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll continue as we do at redicemembers.com for another segment. We spare you from commercial interruptions and blinking website banners. And if you want to hear more, you can sign up and tune in to this show and any of our previous ones in their entirety. We have almost 1,000 programs to dig into. Redicemembers.com is the website. And in the second hour, we speak more about his upcoming book, Demystifying the New World Order Conspiracy. We also speak about the excommunication from the Church of Liberalism once we begin to speak out about some of these topics, how intolerant people can be of these views, and how you might end up losing not only friends, but even family over some of these issues, talking about them. What is it that makes people so brainwashed that they even denounce their own family? They turn their back on their own blood to preserve the illusion of the world that they want to live inside of. It's a very interesting phenomenon. We also speak about World War II revisionism, false flag hate crimes, the movie industry, and that the time is right for some to turn off the television, while for others, it's time to turn it back on and start being part of analyzing the crap that's on it, deconstruct it, and help to awaken people to the propaganda and brainwashing that goes on in entertainment in order to demoralize people. It's time to start setting up our own production houses, organize, get manpower, dedication, time, resources into building something of our own. Start small, but stick to it, and we can create something new here. Speaking of which, we have a new video up here shortly on the website, just about to be released. It's called Hollywoodism, and I think you will enjoy it if you enjoy watching the interesting world of entertainment and what they put in movies, on TV shows, sitcoms, cartoons, and other didactic entertainment for the consumption of the Gentile. So don't miss the video coming up here soon. Also, don't miss the next shows we have coming up. We have Jared Taylor from American Renaissance. We have a 314 on Friday the 13th. Then we have Matt Forney, Rebecca Roth, E. Michael Jones, Marion Van Court, and Joshua Blakeney, to name a few. But we'll be right back, though. Hang on, talk to you right after the break at redicemembers.com.